Professor Alan Sachs, University of Texas at Arlington, political science professor, should be joining us in just a moment, and we will look as President-elect Donald Trump's administration is taking shape. You've got Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions as the United States Attorney General. You've also got Lieutenant General Michael Flynn as a National Security Advisor, and Representative Mike Pompeo nominated as the Director of the CIA. We'll talk to Professor Sachs about these picks, his thoughts on them, and their backgrounds a little bit, some things you need to know, and whether or not the scrutiny and the criticism they have been facing is actually where it needs to be. Meanwhile, I will also ask him about those who are supporting these recent cabinet picks. One person in particular who looks like an evil Muppet, calling them great first steps. Now, that would be one David Duke. 888-574-2723 is the number into the studio as we will look into all of them, specifically with Mike Pompeo. He's picked to lead as CIA director, 52 years old, from California. He is a Republican. He represents the 4th Congressional District there. He has accepted the offer to direct the CIA, but needs to be confirmed by the Senate. Now, since the Republicans are in charge of everything, that shouldn't be a problem. He was president of Century International, a Midwest company that sells imported pumping units to U.S. gas and oil distributors. Before that, he founded a company called Thayer Aerospace, which manufactured components for commercial aerospace, defense, and space industries. Before his 2010 election to represent that district, he attended West Point, graduated first in his class, and Harvard Law School, where he was an editor on the Harvard Law Review. Uh-oh, that sounds very similar to someone we've hated for the last 8 years. Better be careful. He served on the House Intelligence Committee conducting oversight of U.S. intelligence agencies, and the House Select Committee on Benghazi. He and Representative Jordan released their own addendum to the House Benghazi Committee report that condemned Hillary Clinton's leadership and during the attacks and accused the administration of misleading the public about events there. Joining us now is Professor Alan Sachs, University of Texas at Arlington, political science professor. Always a pleasure to speak with him. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning. I agree with you. I'm only willing to take a few more Harvard people. That's it. And enough of that.
Well, I just found that very interesting that many people have talked about President Obama and used the Harvard as almost a slight against him, that he's an elitist.
There was a very interesting book written many years ago about the Vietnam War, and there were many Harvard and Ivy League people who were instrumental in getting us into the war. The book was called The Best and the Brightest, and boy, was it a calamity.
And it's funny, like, this guy, we've talked about, you know, people insulting Obama, he's an elitist, and this guy has the same education, but he's being touted as a selection to lead the CIA. What are your thoughts about Pompeo?
He's good. He's one of the few Harvard law people that are really okay. His name is Mike Pompeo, I believe, and he's really good. He's a West Point graduate. He has military experience. He's been on the intelligence committees in Congress, and I think he's a very, very good choice at CIA.
And what about his pursuit of Hillary Clinton? He and another rep there stood alone in their addendum to the role. And the reality is that there have always been losses of life under secretaries of state, and this was such an extended investigation. At what point do you say, oh, well, maybe we were wrong?
That's a good point. I don't know if Donald Trump is going to let his cabinet choices and congressional people, he may not have much choice, but some of them, like Jason Chaffetz, I think he's the head of the House Government Oversight Committee, they still want to go after Mrs. Clinton. I don't know if that really is going to have any traction, but they don't want to let this alone. They want to go after her.
How much more money can we spend?
Attorney General with Jeff Sessions, who is a U.S. senator from Alabama, and he'll be confirmed, although there'll be some controversy about him too. But General Sessions, if he gets to be Attorney General, and I think he will, he may want to continue going after Mrs. Clinton as well, and not to leave this alone just because the election is off the table. But Donald Trump, as president, may feel very differently. So he may tell his minions, back off, we've got to govern. But they may say, look, just because the election's over is no reason to let her off the hook.
So when you talk Sessions, there's been a lot said about him as racism accusations have followed him during his career. But for the most part, he seems adept at what he's going to do and what he would be charged with. But hearing them continuing to not let go of Clinton and Benghazi, that's troubling for me. At some point, your focus needs to be elsewhere.
Well, I would agree with you from a political standpoint and just to bring the country together a little bit. However, there are others who make an interesting point. They say, look, these are serious charges against her, violations of the law, and she should not be above the law. That's always been that issue. Nobody is above the law. And so they're thinking that Mrs. Clinton should not be above the law either. But from a political standpoint, and I'm sort of on your side, let it go. Or go after her with charges and make President Obama or Donald Trump pardon her. That would be a very interesting take if President-elect Trump, as president, would pardon Hillary Clinton if indeed charges look like they're going to come down the road. That would be the irony of ironies, and it may happen.
And I just feel that at what point, I mean, do they stop? If the no charges, how many years has this been going on and no charges have been filed?
It's been a long while, but it's primarily because they've not gotten information from the State Department where she presided. They haven't gotten the kind of information that they want. People have been given immunity. Subpoenas have been issued. But a lot of these people have taken the Fifth Amendment, and they've stalled. And so I think there's still real frustration with Sandra Sessions and Jason Chaffetz and others, Trey Gowdy, who are saying, we haven't gotten to the bottom of this, and it takes some time. They may want to appoint a special prosecutor, as President Obama's administration was certainly not willing to do. So this may proceed, but it'll be interesting if it does.
Let's talk about Michael Flynn, as he has been picked to take up the job for, what was he going to be, the, why can I think of it, the Defense Intelligence Agency?
The NSA directorship.
So the former director of the NSA and the CIA director, Michael Hayden, has said that he doesn't think Flynn is up for the job as it's strategic globally and not so much of a tactical operation level. Is that
General
a fair...
Flynn has 33 years experience in the military. He's been in intelligence. I think he's a very, very good choice. We have to remember, no matter who is chosen, somebody's going to be in there as a critic, saying they don't understand, their view has been too narrow, they don't have the experience. But General Flynn looks like he could grow into any situation that might demand something of him. I think he's a good, strong individual. I think he'll be confirmed. He's made some comments in the past that may be used against him in the confirmation hearings, but I still think he's going to get through. Some of his confirmation hearings with Senator Sessions, General Flynn, and some others, they're going to be contentious, and there's going to be acrimony, but I think they'll make it through.
Yeah, some of those things people are, he called Islam a political ideology,
right,
a cancer, and said the Islamic world is a failure, which isn't going to make him any friends globally, that's for sure.
It will not, but every one of these individuals, anybody that's been in any kind of high office, military, political, is going to have something in their background. They're going to say something that is going to make somebody mad. And we see this with these appointments as well.
Now, and when we talk about these, do you see any issues with any of these being confirmed? Or do you think with the Republicans in complete control, anything Donald Trump puts forth will pretty much go unchallenged?
Yeah, I think it'll be the latter. The Democrats did something about 3 years ago when Harry Reid was a majority leader in the Senate. They took away the ability to filibuster. That's when the Republicans were in the minority, and they didn't want any filibuster. Now it's coming home to haunt them. So now these confirmations can go through, most of them, with a simple majority. And so I think the Republicans will get their way, oddly enough, because the Democrats took away the power of the filibuster.
Now, since you are a professor in the political realm, I want to ask you something about the Electoral College as it's making the rounds. A lot of people pinning their wishes on the Electoral College voters, who I believe it's the 19th or the 18th of December. going against
the 19th of December. No elector is going to change their mind. Some of these electors here in Texas have actually been threatened, which is outrageous. They've actually been threatened that if they don't change their vote, watch out. None of them are going to change their vote. It's a matter of disloyalty. Even though they may not have to do it legally, there is this cultural tradition. They must do this, and they will. There's only been one elector I know of in many, many years that actually went away and did not vote for the person that the state voted for, and that was a man from my own state of Oklahoma. He voted for George Wallace in 1968.
Oh.
He was a Democratic elector, but he bolted and went for George Wallace. I think there's one elector today in the state of Washington, and they went Democratic as well. And this individual elector said they will not vote for Hillary Clinton. Of course, it's not going to amount to much, but it's interesting that somebody has said that. Other than that, nothing's going to happen. There should be no threats, none of that, coming from the Clinton camp or anybody else.
And it's funny you use the word tradition, because if anything, 2016 has been untraditional across the board. But I agree with you. I don't think that any of the electors, even though there are those that make the argument from the Federalist Papers and all that, that they should, I don't think we're going to see anything happen.
No. In fact, Alexander Hamilton says in the Federalist Papers that what the Electoral College is, we get the will of the people, the gist of the people, but not in a literal sense. And that's exactly what the Electoral College is supposed to be about.
Professor Alan Sachs, always a pleasure to speak with you.
Oh, thank you very much, sir.
Have a great day. 888-574-2723. Up next, we'll continue to look at these appointments, and it's nothing new in Washington. That's next on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says. We just spoke with Professor Alan Sachs about the appointments by Donald Trump that are most likely to go through. Mike Pompeo, you've got Michael Flynn and Sessions, who are going to be confirmed most likely. And there's a lot being said about them, depending on where you go. I don't think that any of them are inherently that bad. But when David Duke applauds this cabinet as great first steps, you have to wonder, as the former Klan leader has said just that, his appointments of Bannon, Flynn, and Sessions are the first steps in the project of taking America back, Duke tweeted out on Friday. And when, if I were doing something that caught the eye and approval of David Duke, I might be rethinking what I'm doing. I might not change it, but it might make me reflect just a little on what I am doing. And what troubles me is that the names we are seeing are all the same names we've seen before. When you talk about Newt Gingrich and the like, I had hoped for something new, the best and the brightest, a search. Maybe they didn't have them ready for this transition. I don't know. But as much as I am against Trump in concept, I am not rooting for his failure. Obviously, as he goes, so goes our country. So I'm not rooting for him to be an abject failure, like some did when President Obama was elected. I want him to succeed. I want his plans to succeed. I just think that through my investigation and my research, some of his plans are dubious at best. And then when you've got the idea of Wilbur Ross being a leading contender for Commerce Secretary, he's a billionaire investor, 78 years old, and again, this is the problem that I have. One, for all you older folks out there that are listening, I get it. 78 to you doesn't seem that old, but I am a firm believer in the bell curve. We got to wait till we're 18 to vote, 16 to drive, 21 to drink. At some point, you're like, oh, they're not mature enough, they're not responsible enough, they're not adults. Great. Once they hit that point, they are. But guess what? There's a downside to that. And I think there are plenty of people out there besides a 78-year-old billionaire who could be doing this job. You know, like who all the millions of people out there, and this is who we have to get. When all of this was set up, people were living to their 30s and maybe 40s. We've got to start thinking bigger picture, but we're picking from the same pool. It's not draining the swamp. He's picking from the swamp. And he said there's nothing he can do about that. Well, there is. force them to change. Let's go to Gabriella in Windsor. Good morning, Gabriella.
Good morning, Ed. How are you, Dad?
Doing well. What's up?
Okay, David Duke. It's the boogeyman of the left to mention it and everything that Trump does. However, Robert Byrd was a grand bupa of the Ku Klux Klan and stayed in the Democratic Senate until he was 90. And Hillary Clinton said that he was her mentor, and it's a whole bunch of pictures of her kissing him and giving, rending him. You know, David Duke, let me tell you, the Ku Klux Klan was a branch that came out of the Democratic Party in them days when it was formed, when there were no even Republican Party. I don't know if you have read about it, but you could Google it, because the Ku Klux Klan came out of the Democratic Party. It didn't come out of the Republican Party. So,
well, didn't the Republicans come out of the Republicans come out of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, the Republicans came out of the Democratic Party.
So you've got two offshoots because they were all one big party. I mean, if you go back long enough in history, my point is that when somebody who holds the ideas of David Duke is applauding you, if he were to call my show today and say, I love the job you're doing, Ed, I would question what I am doing. That is simply my point. And calling him a boogeyman is an easy way to dismiss his involvement.
Robert Byrd was your senator.
I mean, what year is this? Gabriella, thank you for the call. You're missing the point entirely. I'm not talking about Byrd or whether or not I agree with him. What I'm saying is, if David Duke is applauding what you're doing, you might want to reevaluate it. That is what I'm saying. If somebody whose opinion I don't value is saying, good work, Ed, I'm going to rethink what I'm doing. I'm going to say, if that's the kind of guy I'm appealing to, maybe I need to rethink what I'm doing. Doesn't mean I'm going to change my mind, but it will cause me to reflect. And calling him a boogeyman that's put out by the left is to downplay what he has said and done. And I'm not going to do that. What I am saying is clear as day. If someone I am ideologically against agrees with what I am doing, I'm going to question it. That's it. Not saying I'm going to change my mind. There are people who I disagree with on a multitude of things, and yet we're still friends. We get along, we hang out. That's life. But if there's someone who I find morally reprehensible and they like what I'm doing, that's going to cause me to pause and say, am I right on this? And it should. 888-574-2723. Mike Pence saying he's not going to rule out waterboarding under a Trump administration. We'll talk about that. President Obama saying he'll speak out against Donald Trump if necessary, and we'll look at North Dakota and protests going on there. That's next on Ed Says. Welcome back to Ed Says. As the president was in Peru on Sunday, if you think he will go quietly as Donald Trump takes over, apparently not, saying he will speak out against Trump if he thinks the ideals of the United States are at risk. He suggested once he was out of office, he will uphold the tradition of ex-presidents stepping aside quietly to allow their successors space to govern, saying that he preys on former President Bush, saying he could not have been more gracious to me when he came in, and he wanted to give Trump the same chance to pursue his agenda without, quote, somebody popping off at every turn. But there are limits to his silence, apparently, saying as someone who cares deeply for our country, there are issues that have less to do with the specifics of some legislative proposal or battle, or go to the core questions about our values and ideals. Says he'll examine it when the time comes. The things the president has said he's against: the banning of Muslim immigrants, deporting of millions of people, reinstituting waterboarding, repealing Obamacare, canceling the Paris climate deal, and that's just a few. And the thing is, Donald Trump has promised to undo all sorts of President Obama's actions that he signed in. He has promised that the executive orders will be reversed. But will that actually happen? especially considering some of them are in place to protect American workers, particularly those that are government contractors, whether it's time off or minimum wages. Will he be selective about it? The president saying his plan is to finish his job for the next 2 months, then go on vacation, get some rest, spend some time with his girls, do some writing, and do some thinking. And he repeated that, give them a hearing, referring to Merrick Garland. The president saying, that's not why the American people sent us to Washington to play those games. And yet there are those who are plotting these games because it is their team doing it. And that is the biggest problem I have. I will call out either side for playing political games. And if you do not do the same because it is your side winning these silly games, then you're part of the problem. And when President Obama says he's against waterboarding, you've got Vice President Elect Mike Pence saying he doesn't rule it out under the Trump administration. As he was on Face the Nation, he brought up the host, John Dickerson, brought up Senator John McCain in his comments, where he insisted that any attempt to bring back waterboarding would be quickly challenged in court. McCain saying, I don't give a damn what the President of the United States wants to do. We will not waterboard. We will not torture. What does it say about America if we're going to inflict torture on people? Pence saying, I have great respect for Senator McCain. What I can tell you is that going forward, as he outlined in the speech in Ohio, is that President Donald Trump is going to focus on confronting and defeating radical Islamic terrorism as a threat to this country. We're going to have a president again who will never say what we'll never do. And I couldn't disagree more. Here in America, we do say what we won't do. We do stand for something. And anyone who has experienced it, there have been those out there who have said waterboarding isn't torture. And some of them, Mancow in Chicago, Christopher Hitchens, both underwent it and definitively said it was torture. Then you have Sean Hannity, who said he would do it for charity, I don't even, what was it, 8 years ago? And hasn't manned up to do it. And he'll continue to say, oh, it's not torture. You've got Mike Pence saying, our president will not say what we won't do. And I argue that in America, we lay out exactly what we won't do. That's what makes us better. We won't waterboard. We won't torture. We won't threaten families of those involved in activities, whether terroristic or illegal. The individual is responsible for themselves, not their families. And by not saying it won't happen under this administration, is in a way condoning it. This idea that we can operate in secret. We won't say what we're not going to do. Why don't we sneak in and fight these battles in the dark of night? Yeah, thank you for thinking of all of that. We don't have military experts over the years who have all been working on these plans. Holy cow, where have you guys been our entire lives? I don't know what you think America stands for, but it doesn't stand for torture. As I said, being a free country is about being reactionary. Somebody does something bad, we have to react to it. We can't just round up people we think might do bad things. We can't just punish the families of those who do bad things. And we do not torture, because it's been proven that the information you get from torture is not always reliable. And we're better than that. And if you're one of those that believes, oh, it's a different time, terrorism, then you're selling out the ideals that make this country great. And I can't abide by it. 888-574-2723. As I said, when you talk about the executive orders Donald Trump might roll back, it is part of it has to do with President Barack Obama's executive orders. He said he will reverse them on day one. There was an imposition of a higher minimum wage and paid sick leave for all the employees of federal contractors. an initiative by the Obama administration for business lobbies. And some of the most important administrative rulings on labor law, a 2015 decision that would make large companies operating through franchises responsible for working conditions of franchise employees. All of these things could go. So those protections, there is a concern that a Trump presidency could be a problem for labor, the very people who probably voted for him. Let's turn our attention now to North Dakota as ongoing rioting is reported on a bridge. 400 protesters and law enforcement officers facing off. Apparently fires were set. No reports of injuries. Sunday evening, the protesters removed a truck that had been on the bridge since October 27th. The protesters had started multiple fires, and fire departments were on the scene. And apparently the police are turning water cannons on them, 26 degrees at 9 p.m. Using a water cannon and concussion grenades in addition to tear gas. One arrest as far as 8:30 last night. It's one thing that's not getting a lot of attention is the Dakota Access. I'm sure you've seen it in passing, but I don't think it's getting enough attention. And I wonder how you would feel if this was going in your backyard when you say, oh, why are these people protesting? Well, it's property. And people hold their property, whether you agree with it or not. Not in my backyard is something that's commonly said. It's a common refrain. Let's go to Ken in Bloomfield. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, how you doing, Ed?
Doing well.
The answer on your executive orders, I mean, that's because that's one man's agenda. That's not, he has Congress, he has Senate. He just decides he wants to do something. They don't want to go along, so he just does it. That isn't what the people of the United States want, maybe a small percentage of them. So that's one reason for reversing them. And the other thing is, the man is Donald Trump. He has a whole team he's putting together. He's only one piece of the puzzle. So his team is going to advise him in the proper way, as they did in his election campaign, to head in the right direction. And that's why he'll be successful.
By undoing higher minimum wage and paid sick leave for federal contractors?
Because nobody agreed to it other than one man. Well, if it was good, why didn't Congress and Senate pass?
Oh, I don't know,
he
Ken. Why didn't they work with him, Ken?
Because
you tell me.
He had a Democratic Congress. It was a bad idea.
For 2 years.
It was a bad idea.
For 2 years. And who says he put this forth in those 2 years? You tell me why he couldn't get anything done.
Well, and he had a Democratic Congress. He should have.
For how long?
For when he was there to approve these things, but he didn't even want to bother with Congress. He had his pen and he had his phone. That's a ridiculous answer, Ed.
No, it's not. He's been facing obstructionism the entire time.
Then you don't have a president there with Congress and Senate. You just have a dictator.
If you want to talk dictator, wait till we get further into this administration when you want to talk about these policies putting forth. If you think a businessman who built his employees for as much as he could on their sweat, you think you're really going to get something good for labor? You think these jobs are going to return in the numbers he's promising?
I think they will, yes, because we're sending them down there, and the guy's doing them. I go on vacation, used to go on vacation to Mexico. They pay the people $1 a day. When NAFTA got approved, I said to my nephew, who was a Ford executive, I said, that's the worst thing for the United States ever. And he said, why? I said, because they'll give them $1 an hour. They'll have some people lined up here to the end of the street. He called me like 2 months later and said, boy, Uncle Ken, you were right. I said, of course. I mean, there's no rules down there. They can do whatever they want. No OSHA, nothing.
So how do you plan on bringing those jobs back?
With a duty. In other words, like if you charge $3,000 a car to come back here with them cars, I guess they ain't worthwhile to build them down there no more, is it?
Yeah, all that's going to do is raise the price on you and me. If it's still cheaper for them to function down there, they will. Because you got
to
talk.
It's better to raise the price on us and keep our money here than to. Get it? We're getting stuff in the store right now. For instance, you send your son down to buy a lock set for yourself. You buy a Schlage lock, it costs $22. You buy a Quick set, it costs $6. All we're doing is filling up our landfills with that junk egg. Your son goes and buys it because he says it was cheaper, Dad. Or that's all the store had because he could buy five of them for the same price. You could have one Schlage that'll last you for years. You can't buy something good because all that junk is infiltrating the market. And it breaks all the time.
Yeah, but if you're...
It's junk, Ed. It's junk. You send your kid down to buy a hacksaw blade.
I'm not sending my kid anywhere. He's two and a half. But
well, I'm saying
what I'm saying to you is there are people that purchase that.
$3
people can't.
One is a dollar.
So some people can't afford the Schlage or whatever you're talking about. Some people can't afford the expensive one. They need something to get them by.
They can't afford the expensive one because it would fix it forever. It wouldn't fix it for...
Kent, you're just raising the prices on people who are already having a hard time. Thank you for the call, 888-574-2723. We'll be back here on Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut.
Just a dissenting voice in a politically correct world. Ed Says on the Talk of Connecticut. Join in, 888-574-2723.
Welcome back to Ed Says here on the Talk of Connecticut, 888-574-2723. That is the number. Let's go to Mike in Glastonbury. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Ed. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Good. I wanted to say, not without some irony, that the United States is getting stage by stage, cycle by cycle, the dictators that it deserves. Every election cycle, as the techniques of advertising and arguing and promoting and researching become better or more sophisticated, at least. There's more time spent on a perpetual campaign in which both of the two major parties participate. And I notice this increasing, like, a distance. It's kind of like watching somebody stretching two chunks of taffy and waiting to see how long the elasticity is going to hold up before the whole thing breaks and our credibility goes with it. Opposition research, which was started, I think, largely by Bill Clinton, but probably he wasn't the first, was designed as a rapid response to H.W. Bush. And each candidate successively learns things from his opposition as well as from mistakes that happened in previous campaigns. So, in a way, everything is getting better or more sharp, and both sides are providing little toolboxes of equipment for each side to cut up the other. I don't think there's going to be much forgiveness as there might traditionally at least have been in legend, or at least everybody used to just kind of forget about it and say, that's the American way, let's just get past it. I think too many people now are going to enjoy the rancor of a campaign that never ends. So I don't have an answer for you in any sense, but then again, did talk shows ever design themselves to go out of existence? And I'll leave you with that.
Right. Yeah, I'll always have something to talk about. And when you look at it as well, you got to look at who's getting rich at the constant campaigning. And maybe we need to rethink the whole thing. The idea of our representative government being an ever-evolving government needs to be re-examined, and it should be. What worked 150 years ago might not work now, and I certainly think that while our founding fathers might have foreseen people exploiting our government for power and prestige, I don't think they also saw those with money being able to exploit it to the levels they are, and all the way across. It's all about money, power, prestige. And if we're not putting safeguards in to protect ourselves against that, we're just going to be taken advantage of. And don't worry, if politics cleaned up tomorrow and everything was perfect, I would still find things to talk about. It wouldn't be of the political bent. Got a new Star Wars movie coming in December. There's always something to talk about. 888-574-2723. And I was just talking with Ken, who called in, and he talked about President Obama having total control. But that's not really the case, because you would have to have a certain number of seats to really get that done. That would, to have total control, would require 60 on his side. And in 2009, 57 seats were held by Democrats, two independents. 59 was the number in 2009. and in January 2009 is 55. So he never had complete and total control. And again, it was for those 2 years. So when we're talking about the total control of Congress for Democrats lasted all of a total of 6 months from September 24, 2009 to February 4, 2010. And then Scott Brown was sworn in Massachusetts. So they did not have control for a full 2 years. Total control. Total of 4 months. And that's when Obamacare was passed, and that's what he was able to get done. So when we talk about obstructionism, let's really talk about it. And again, all this, you know, this surface-level discussion, let's dig deeper. It's easy to say that they had control for 2 years, but they had total control where things could happen for 4 months. Now let's talk about what the Republicans are going to do for the next 4 years with total control. Or 2 years, I guess. We'll see how it goes. 888-574-2723. The problem I have is it's all about undoing. It's all about reversing. It's whether it's Roe v. Wade, you know, we're going to get rid of that. Well, here's the thing. Abortions happened prior to Roe v. Wade, and lives were lost. It's dangerous, and women died. You've even got the Pope now who's saying, forgive abortion. He's not okaying it, but forgive the sin. So if you are of the religious side of things, you've got the Pope coming out and saying, forgive the sin. And you've got Texas making it harder on people. This regressive sort of politics is what troubles me. Because what it is if how far are we going to go back? 888-574-2723. From the current, according to a new survey, people want to remain in Connecticut, but they also want jobs and affordable housing. 2016 AARP Connecticut survey found 18% of people said it was very likely they would move to another state in the next 5 years. Another 22% said it was somewhat likely. So that's a total of 30%, but an overwhelming majority ruled it out completely. Gallup poll last year showed that 46% of respondents would like to move, but the AARP survey wanted to look into elements in the community that make people more likely to stay. Connecticut voters want to remain in their communities, according to Connecticut State Director Nora Duncan for the AARP, signifying the need of our state to address gaps in the quality of important safety, economic, and health resources available. We are obviously in tough times here in the state, and the question is, how do we get out of them? We talk about the pensions and the expenses that were not paid into for decades, and now they're coming home. And I was talking with someone the other day about mill rates in the city and how there are nonprofits and religious organizations that get lower rates and buying up property and what can be done. And then we talk about the future of Hartford when it comes to the highways. There's a lot of things up in the air now and a lot of uncertainty. But one of the things that everybody said, and young and old, said it was more places for young adults to socialize. 58% saying those types of places were important to a community, and 40% saying that their community was lacking in them. And when it comes to affordable housing, they say that new apartments being built in downtown Hartford are priced at a point that is within reach for young people who are just starting their careers. And CT Fast Track, whether you like it or not, this is according to this AARP survey, has made it easier to get in and out of the city without driving. The biggest factor keeping young people in the state is availability of jobs. A report from the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving found that Hartford metro area retains the fewest four-year graduates of any metro region in the country, with 60% of graduates citing jobs as their reason for living. So if you're going to try to attract people, you have to keep them there. You have to give them a reason. I went to school in Richmond, Virginia. I got my job there. I started my career there. I lived there for 10 years and worked there for five full-time while finishing up school for, I think, two of those. And then on to Boston, where I spent another 5 years. And then here, where I've been, I think, going on 6 years now. Radio is a really mobile industry. Like, you got to move in radio. Where they, when they, the opportunity arises, you go, yeah, I'll pack the bags. But I'm here to stay, Connecticut. Yeah, lucky you. We bought a house. We're not going anywhere. My parents moved to Southington. Like, we're staying. So hopefully this whole thing works out. Hopefully you're enjoying it, because I would like to remain employed. But that is the big thing. When you want, we want to keep people here. They got to create jobs. And we've got to look at how unaffordable housing can be. Anybody who's attempted to rent knows that it's super expensive everywhere. And buying is tough when you're not making much as far as wages go. 888-574-2723. That is the number. Write it down. Share it with a friend. Text it to someone. Save it in your phone. Be sure to use it tomorrow when I return after Brad Davis. You can also find me on Twitter at EdSaysCT. I've been quiet lately. I really haven't had much to say on Twitter. I've been playing Plants vs. Zombies Heroes on my phone and not really opening the Twitter app much. If you missed something on the show or for whatever reason want to hear it again, the podcast goes up at talkofconnecticut.com. It's called Ed Said because it's the past tense of Ed Says, and I'm clever. I'll post today's a little bit later. If you missed the interview with Professor Alan Sachs, that will be sure to make it, as we looked at Trump's recent appointments and what that means. And what else? My email, edsays@talkofconnecticut.com. Should you feel like typing something out long form, I always read them and try to respond to them as quickly as I can. But sometimes I'm just lazy. That does it for today's show. Thanks to Christian, my producer. Up next, it's Dan Lavalla with Front and Center here on the Talk of Connecticut.